This is our third oral argument, and the court does want to thank counsel for agreeing to move up our timing on this one, since we had one of our oral arguments go to a non-oral calendar. I note that there, I think there are two respondents in this part in this case. No, they're not.
Counsel along with Mr. Pastor.
Okay, great. So we're just having one counsel argue with for each side. Great. Just wanted to double check on that. Marshall, will you call our next case? Thank you. Counsel, as both of you probably know, each of you will have 15 minutes for your principal argument, and counsel for appellant, you'll have an additional 5 minutes for rebuttal. You can use the podiums closest to you, one of the things we did in the pandemic planning, or you can come to the podium in the middle, whatever suits your needs. I will note that it is the panel in the middle that has a timer on it, which can help you keep track of your time. And also, that podium can be raised or lowered depending upon your needs. I will ask you to introduce yourself at the beginning of each of your arguments, because we do tape these arguments and post them to our website. So that way we'll always know who is making the arguments on whose behalf. And with that, counsel for appellant, whenever you're ready.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, my name is John Edison. I'm here on behalf of the Relator Independent School District number 2580 East Central Schools. And Your Honors, this case is about an appeal of an expulsion decision by the School Board of East Central Schools. And I'm here before you on behalf of the school district asking you to reverse a decision that was made by the MDE that I think is really can best be characterized as just an erroneous application of the Minnesota Supreme Court's decision in the AD expulsion case. So in our briefing, we cited a number of grounds upon which we believe the MDE's decision should be reversed. There's three of them that I'd like to address today in my oral argument. The first is, as I mentioned, the MDE's erroneous interpretation of the two what I'll call willful conduct grounds for expulsion set forth in the Pupil Fair Dismissal Act. The second is that the MDE, in our view, made findings of fact that are not supported by substantial evidence in the expulsion hearing record, and the MDE failed to give the proper deference to the hearing officer and the school board in the initial expulsion proceedings. And then finally, it's our position that the MDE engaged in an error of law by applying a new standard, evidentiary standard for expulsions, by requiring the district to provide substantial direct evidence of the conduct warranting an expulsion as opposed to substantial evidence, which is the standard set forth in the statute.
But before we even get to that, why isn't this moot?
Your Honor, this is not moot because the MDE has directed the school district to change its records to show that WM was not expelled from school. And while there's no Minnesota cases on this issue, we've cited a number of cases from other jurisdictions in our briefing that under these circumstances, an expulsion issue is not moot. And further, I'll point out that in the AD case that I mentioned, that is a case where the student at issue, AD, was expelled shortly before her time as a high school student ended. And that case carried on before this court and all the way up to the Supreme Court for quite some time after she had graduated.
On the student's appeal, correct?
That is correct. But
and a student has, you would agree, a pretty strong, tangible interest in having something removed from his or her record?
I would agree with that, Your Honor. And I would say that the district has an equally strong record in ensuring that when there is a student misconduct that results in an expulsion, that should be preserved in a record. And
So explain that to me, because, I mean, It seems rather abstract, an abstract interest on the part of the school district and something more concrete on the part of the student. I mean, expulsion on the record could get in the way of the student's future progress academically and perhaps in employment. Agreed?
Well, I would say that I don't necessarily.
I thought that was an easy question. I thought you'd say yes. And the next question was going to be, what would really hinder the school district in the future going forward in its operation of a school system if this particular decision were to be, if this appeal were to be dismissed and not resolved any further. I don't understand the tangible importance of this for the school district.
Well, the district believes it's important to have a record that this type of behavior won't be tolerated and it warrants expulsion. I mean, I think that...
Do you think they're going to forget that this happened, that there was a lockdown at this school? I have a feeling everyone's going to remember this for the rest of their lives. And it doesn't, you know, whether it is or is not part of the permanent record. I agree with Judge Johnson. I see the students' interests, but here, because the expulsion's been expunged, I'm not so sure I see, you know, how the world's going to end for the school.
Well, I'd like to respond to that in a couple ways. I mean, first of all, there is a decision from the MDE saying that this type of behavior doesn't warrant expulsion, and that's concerning for a lot of reasons, particularly given the environment we're in right now, where it's no secret that school shootings are a significant issue of concern nationwide. And to say that posting something on social media about that is simply a joke and brushing it off as a joke is really concerning to the district. And so that's one thing. The other thing is the MDE has stated in this decision what its opinion is in terms of the interpretation of the Pupil Fair Dismissal Act. And that is relevant to the school district in East Central and all other school districts in Minnesota. This is an issue of statewide importance. That if the MDE is saying that it's going to ignore the AD case, which it did in this situation, that is something that East Central certainly and other school districts that are aware of the MDE's decisions are going to keep in mind when they're making student disciplinary decisions. And so,
Now you're talking about exceptions to mootness. And I think my questions are more focused on what I think is often called technical mootness, or sort of the first question is whether there's any possibility of effective relief. And since he's graduated, I'm not sure what you mean. You don't want to pull back his diploma, do you?
Your Honor,
I thought that was an easy question too. But if you do, let us know.
No, the district does not intend to do that. But what I'll say is, when this issue has been addressed in other jurisdictions, it has not been deemed to be moot, and we're asking this court to follow how other districts.
I've seen your case law from Georgia, Indiana, and Illinois, and I think all of those cases are appeals by students who are seeking to, you know, to clear their record, basically. Do you have any case law in which a school district is the appellant seeking reversal of an adverse decision?
At this point in time, we have the cases we cited in the brief. And so I guess ultimately, Your Honors, our position is that this case is not moot because the school district has been directed by the MDE to change a record. Now, we can argue over the significance of that and whether the student has a greater interest when a student is appealing an expulsion decision in clearing his or her name, but the fact remains here that the district has been directed to change a record, and so the district can pursue relief through an appeal to this court by having that decision overturned and not being required to change a record. So in my view, that means that this case is not moot. And then in addition to that, there's the mootness exceptions, which I was talking about, which we believe this is an issue of statewide importance. We believe it is an issue that's capable of repetition yet evading review, because this is a type of situation that could certainly happen in the future where a student is a senior in high school, does something that warrants expulsion, is proposed for expulsion, and by the time it gets through the appeals process, that student has graduated.
So let me ask you about the statewide importance, because I think our case law tells us we're supposed to apply that exception to the mootness doctrine pretty narrowly. So what, and it's supposed to be something that involves urgency or significance. So what is the case out there before that's applied that mootness exception that you think is closest to this situation?
The case that is out there that is the closest to this one? Mm-hmm. I don't have one that I can point to at this time on that. But again, what I'll say is that historically, when the court has looked at student discipline decisions, that has been the province of a school board. And there's case law that talks about how courts and the MDE are supposed to proceed cautiously with interfering with the school board's discretion when it comes to handling student behavior incidents. And so what has happened here is we now have a decision from the MDE that's inconsistent with what the AD decision says.
How is that? Tell me how, that maybe we should turn to the merits. How is the MDE's decision inconsistent with AD?
I would say that it's inconsistent because both the MDE and WM have refused to acknowledge, and I believe, I can't speculate as to the reasons why, but the AD court clearly said that the first ground for expulsion set forth in the Pupil Fair Dismissal Act, the willful violation ground, is not the same as the other two, the willful conduct grounds. And so when you read the MDE's decision, it's clear from the MDE's decision that their position is that the hearing officer committed an error of law because the hearing officer did not apply the appropriate definition of willful. And then what follows to me is just tortured reasoning. I've read the decision many times to try to follow the MDE's logic, and what they do is they conflate the various standards set forth in the Pupil Fair Dismissal Act to meet the result that was achieved here.
So we're talking, let me direct you more specifically. We're talking about willful conduct here, right?
Correct.
AD in part two of the opinion dealt with willful conduct.
Yes.
And ultimately resolved that issue by reasoning on page 263. The risk and possibility of harm is too tenuous to constitute substantial evidence of endangerment. The record is simply devoid of evidence that suggests endangerment results from the mere presence of a forgotten 3-inch pocket knife. Doesn't that concept of risk being too tenuous, doesn't that at least arguably apply in this case to the risk of sending a Snapchat message with flashing green lights?
No, Your Honor, I don't agree with that. And the reason why is there's a footnote, I believe it's footnote 15 in the AD decision, where the court says there was no dispute over whether the student acted willfully when she brought the knife to school. That there was no dispute that she put it in her bag, and she did that intentionally, and she brought it to school. The parties agreed on that. And so that's where the hearing officer in this case applied a two-part analysis, which has been overlooked by WM and the MDE. What the hearing officer did, which I believe is consistent with the AD decision, is said you look at, in interpreting the two, what I'll call willful conduct grounds.
Okay, can I stop you? Because to be really candid, I think you're being evasive, and I feel like the school district, this part of the AD opinion, to me, is very applicable. Whether the evidence in this case is not enough to show that there's, sufficient risk and possibility of endangerment, that's perhaps a question. But the ALJ never mentioned that, never touched on that. The school board's decision never mentioned it. The department, MDE, to its credit, talked about this issue, applied the AD decision. I actually think they applied it correctly. And in your appellate brief, you never take any issue with what the MDE did on the issue of whether the risk of possibility of harm is too tenuous. You never address that issue in your opening brief. Respondents counsel discusses it throughout the red brief, and in your reply, it's completely absent. Your reply brief does not use the word tenuous. How can you say that the MDE erred by applying this part of a Supreme Court opinion when you've never applied it yourself?
Your Honor, I respectfully disagree we haven't applied it, and here's why. So what I was trying to say, and I don't think I was being evasive, is that when you talk about the willful
conduct... Well, I'm talking about the school district's overall, the entire appeal, the briefing, the administrative decisions below and the appellate briefing appear to be trying to avoid this issue of tenuousness, the outer limits of risk of endangerment.
Well, Your Honor, there's three grounds for expulsion set forth.
Right, and two of them are willful conduct, and both of them, this part of the AD opinion applies to both, willful conduct to endanger, willful conduct to disrupt.
Well, so here's what I would say about that. You're talking about endangerment, which is in the third ground. There's a second ground of expulsion, which we haven't talked about yet. And so my position on that, when you read the AD decision, is that the Supreme Court defined willful as intentional by looking at dictionary definitions. And that's what this court did in the decision below, too. And so then, in my view, what you have is an analysis where you look at, was there willful conduct, number one? And in this case, there was. He never disputed he posted the video.
I got to stop you again. That's not the extent of the district court's analysis. It's not just, is it intentional? Stop. It's, is it intentional, and is the risk or possibility of harm enough to actually put the risk on the kid rather than on someone else? And if it's too tenuous, then they're not going to do it. I mean, that's part of the analysis. It's part of the definition of willful conduct.
I don't agree with that, Your Honor. Willful conduct, willful means intentional. So when you look at intentional conduct, did WM post the video on Snapchat intentionally? There was no dispute about that. So then the second part is, was there a substantial disruption or was there endangerment? And on the substantial disruption piece, WM's attorney admitted repeatedly on the record that there was a substantial disruption.
So are you saying, counsel, that you just look at these things each with blinders on? Was there the willful conduct? Was there endangerment? You don't, there needs, doesn't need to be any connection between the two.
Yes, Your Honor, and the reason I say that is because if you look at it otherwise, you're ignoring what the Supreme Court said. And this is key. The Supreme Court said that when you talk about a willful violation, the way that's written, it's intent to violate a policy. And then the court went on to clearly say that that's not the same as willful conduct. There's clear language in the Supreme Court's decision that says that that is a different standard because the court legislature used different words. And so I see my time's up. I'll save my remaining arguments for rebuttal.
The questions are
available. Thank you.
Thank you. You'll have an additional 5 minutes for rebuttal. Counsel for respondent, we turn to you.
May it please the court, I am Paulo Castro, attorney for the respondent WM. This is a case about a student who posted a 6-second video comparing, intending to compare the flashing lights of a lockdown drill to a rave party without knowing that there was any audio or reference to an active shooter situation. The events that followed that day were simply too attenuated and were not foreseeable to the student. Here, the MDE correctly determined that the grounds for expulsion under the Pupil Fair Dismissal Act were not met because the WM's conduct was simply too attenuated and from any of the subsequent events that occurred that day, and his relevant part of the conduct was not willful conduct. However, before this court considered the merits of this appeal, the district's appeal should be dismissed as moot. WM graduated, received a signed diploma, and he is not seeking further attendance in the district or any other district. A decision on the merits here is not necessary because WM is no longer an enrolled pupil. An expulsion is a tool used by school boards to prohibit further attendance from an enrolled pupil. WM cannot be prohibited further attendance here because he already graduated. A decision from this court will not change the district's status. There's no legitimate interest in the district in expelling WM anymore because he already graduated. We've talked about records, about having the expulsion in WM's records. It is not necessary here because the record already contains that the incident occurred. The record also contains that there was a suspension, and the record contains that the district even sought to expel WM. Also, there's no legitimate interest in the district to demonstrate to the general public that certain type of behavior will generate consequences, because there are privacy laws that protect student data and the district cannot disclose them with the general public.
But Mr. DeCastro, I hear appellant, the school district, saying that there's an exception to the mootness doctrine that should apply, which is this is an issue of statewide significance, given MDE's opinion in this matter, and just given the statewide importance of school safety and the need to, I mean, in this world where we see far too many school shootings. I mean, could you address that for me? Why shouldn't we look at the merits of this, just given those statewide and national dynamics?
This is a situation with such unique set of facts and a cascading of events.
Because children never record things on their videos during school time. That never happens. I mean, is that really so unique? What is your argument for uniqueness based on these facts, Council?
The uniqueness based in these facts, it's basically the cascading of events that happened after the posting of the video. They were not reasonably foreseeable. WM could not have imagined that the posting of a six-second video where she did not know there was a background voice of a teacher referring to an active shooter would lead to law enforcement involvement. So the uniqueness part of the situation is not the video, the recording itself, but it's the cascading of events that were not reasonably foreseeable for WM at that point. The MD correctly determined that WM's conduct in posting the video was not willful conduct under the PFDA, because the PFDA requires some causal connection between willful conduct and any disruption or endangerment. And that day, the subsequent events were simply too attenuated from WM's conduct, and WM's relevant part of the conduct was not willful conduct. As said, WM did not know there was a background voice that is the only part of the video that could be interpreted to suggest an active shooter situation. To allow the district's reading of the PFDA would permit districts to deny students their fundamental right to an education for any conduct that bears some attenuated relationship to the final result, and it would be an unreasonable reading of the PFDA. Willful, for purposes of the PFDA, must mean something. Otherwise, it would not be in the statute. Words in statutes must be given meaning. Willful here cannot simply mean accidental conduct or reckless conduct. The record is clear that WM was not aware of any background voice that could be interpreted to suggest an active shooter situation. If there had not been that audio, which is the only part of the video that could be interpreted to suggest an active shooter situation, we would probably not even be here today, because it was the audio which the student from Barnum, the other district, reacted to and reported to the principal. There must be some causal connection between willful conduct and disruption or endangerment under the PFDA. The statute reads willful conduct that significantly disrupts or endangers. In other words, it must be a willful conduct that is disruptive or willful conduct that disrupts. The grammatical construction of this sentence suggests a causal relationship between willful conduct and any disruption or endangerment. If we were to ask, was it WM's willful conduct that disrupted or endangered? Here, the situation is too attenuated for us to clearly answer yes. It would be an absurd result to permit students' constitutional right to an education to be taken away because their conduct bore some remote relationship to the later events. There were several intervening acts between the posting of the video and the disruption and endangerment that attenuate the chain of causation. First, WM recorded and posted the video. Then the student from Barnum saw the video. The Barnum student reported to the principal. The principal from Barnum reported to law enforcement. law enforcement officers started its response without checking the video. The law enforcement later found out it was a...
I would hope not. I don't want the police running down a video if they think there's an active shooter in a school. I want them going directly to the school to make sure there's no active shooter, and if there is, to kill him. I mean, I don't buy that argument at all, counsel. But continue.
After that, law enforcement found out it was at East Central. Later, law enforcement contacted the East Central principal and asked the principal to put the school in lockdown. Then the principal put the school in lockdown. Thus, here, as you can see, a lot of intervening acts occurred that attenuate the act of recording and posting the video, and the final result, which was the disruption or endangerment. Education is a fundamental right. To hold students accountable under the Pupil Fair Dismissal Act for conduct that are extremely attenuated to the result would basically allow districts to expel students for almost any conduct without any limitation to the chain of causation. It would affect the student's fundamental right to an education, and it would basically give districts a lot of discretion to expel students and affect such an important right.
Does the record indicate whether there was a school policy prohibiting students from filming events in school with their phones during school hours?
To my knowledge, there is a policy that prohibits use of cell phones in classrooms, but I'm not sure if this is so specific in school events or lockdown drills or things like that.
Well, how would that play to the willfulness then? I mean, if let's say there is a policy at the school that says no student should take films on their cameras during school hours, okay? And let's say your client knew that and did this anyway, and then I agree, everything sort of just went off in a very strange direction, but wouldn't that play to the willfulness? He knew he shouldn't be doing this, he did it anyway, so therefore he should accept even the unintended consequences of a clear violation of school policy.
Your Honor, I have to disagree with the use of cell phone being argued to establish willful conduct under Section B and C. We're talking about, you were talking about willful violation, which is Section A, which is not in dispute in this situation. If we were in dispute about the willful violation section, which is Section A, I think this situation about knowing that there is a school policy, and even knowing that there is a school policy, the student took the phone out of the pocket to record the video, then we would be arguing about Section A. But I believe it wouldn't play a role for Section B and C to establish willful conduct.
Mr. DeCastro, if I could return for a moment to the mootness issue. You know, and the district in its reply brief states that no published case in Minnesota squarely addresses whether the expungement of an expulsion record itself presents a contestable issue after a student graduates. One, would you agree with that? And two, if that's true, do you have a position about whether we should be issuing a precedential opinion with regard to mootness in this case?
Your Honor, could you please repeat your question?
Sure. In the district's reply brief, the district states that there's no published precedential case in Minnesota that squarely addressed whether the expungement of an expulsion record presents an unresolved contestable issue after a student graduates. So teeing up the precise mootness issue here. One, do you agree with that statement? And two, if you do you have a position on whether this court should issue a precedential opinion with regard to the mootness issue in this case?
I believe that this court should issue a precedential opinion with regard to the mootness issue in this case because this situation is a situation that can be fully litigated in different opportunities. We're talking here about a student that graduated, but there are, for example, senior students that are expelled, but they do not fulfill their credit requirements to graduate. And the district would still have a legitimate interest in seeking their expulsion to prohibit further attendance. So the student, let's say, moves to a different district or takes longer to graduate if the student still wants to go to that specific district. So I believe it would be a relevant and important decision on the mootness issue to establish that in specific situations like this situation, in this specific case, there's no legitimate interest for the district. There's no meaningful or effective relief for the district, so it should be moved. The court should dismiss this appeal as moot because, as said, there's no meaningful relief or effective relief that can be awarded under the Pupil Fair Dismissal Act. And alternatively, this court should affirm the commissioner's decision because the MDE correctly found that WM's conduct was too attenuated from any of the subsequent events that occurred that day, and the relevant portion of his conduct was not willful conduct as required by the PFDA. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. DeCastro. Council for the district will turn to you.
Thank you. So I want to start by just talking about...
And if you'd introduce yourself.
Oh, sorry.
Before you begin your rebuttal.
This is John Edison, again, on behalf of Independent School District 2580. I want to start by talking about what Mr. Castro said with respect to the willful conduct grounds for dismissal. He said that the standard set forth in the Pupil Fair Dismissal Act is willful conduct that is disruptive or willful conduct that causes an endangerment. That is what the school district is arguing here. What we're saying is that for those two standards, that you have willful conduct and then does it cause a disruption? Willful conduct and then does it cause an endangerment? And here, again, there's no dispute that WM created this video. Now, on the question of whether it caused a substantial disruption, we heard one thing today about attenuation. But the hearing record from the expulsion hearing says something different. And attorney Dan Stewart, who represented WM at that hearing, repeatedly admitted on the record that there was a substantial disruption here and it was caused by WM's behavior. So all we should be talking about for purposes of this appeal is, was there willful conduct? And again, the answer to that question has to be yes, because he never disputed that he created this video. Now, I want to turn back to the endangerment piece that, Judge Johnson, you asked me several questions about that. And I respectfully disagree with the assertion that we didn't address that in our briefing, because I believe we did. The hearing officer, this was addressed at the hearing, and the hearing officer's recommended decision to the board in paragraph 15 of his conclusions. He specifically outlines...
Can you point me to a page of the addendum? You're talking about the school board decision?
I don't have the addendum in front of me. It's the hearing officer's recommended decision. It's paragraph 15 in his conclusions.
Okay, I think it's on addendum 50. Okay, I'm there.
And so in there, he outlines the basis upon which he's concluded that there was endangerment in this situation. And we believe that the reasons that he set forth there are sufficient to meet that standard under the case law that exists today. He's talked about how there was endangerment because you had officers arriving at the school at high rates of speed, parking in areas that weren't necessarily designated parking spots, coming into school with guns drawn, and that created a dangerous situation. And another thing is there was testimony from Principal Youngberg about the impact that this had on other students in terms of concerns about coming to school, anxiety, things of that nature. That's part of the hearing record. Now, that is relevant to the issue of endangerment that was addressed in the Polonia decision we've cited in our brief, where a student in Duluth brought a fake gun on a bus And one of the things that was addressed in that case was the impact of that behavior on others, or what might happen when someone does that and what, how it might prompt others to act. And that is a, that's what we're talking about in this case with respect to endangerment. And so, again, to say, and then another thing I'll say on that point is to say that, you know, this was all about a rave, a video about a rave. I do not believe at all that that's supported by the hearing record. That is the opinion of WM's counsel, which was adopted by the MDE. But when you look at the hearing record as a whole, there's WM admitted in his written statement, which was Exhibit 8 and the district's hearing exhibits, that he knew there was going to be a lockdown, and he created this video while that was going on. We had a teacher testify at the hearing that there was a voice repeatedly saying over the intercom that the school was in a lockdown. And that's the whole reason that he made the comment about it might making the shooter pissed off because it might be annoying. And so for the MDE to conclude without the benefit of hearing all that testimony that that's not relevant at all, but we're going to accept the arguments of WM's counsel in a written statement that he submitted, which without testifying at the hearing, which I understand he doesn't have to me that's ignoring substantial evidence in the record. And then finally, I just want to come back to the mootness issue briefly before I wrap up my arguments, is that in terms of the mootness exception for things that are capable of repetition yet evading review, Mr. Castro commented on other circumstances in which this may come before a court for decision. I continue to have concerns about that because a student could graduate. What happens if a student withdraws and goes to a different school district? Then does an expulsion appeal become moot at that point? Because that happens with frequency. And with that, I see my time is up. So thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you very much. Thank you to both counsel for the helpful arguments and briefing. This ends our oral calendar. The court is in recess.